Bootstrapping, a Cobra Kai fanfic by Minocchio, read by GorillasGal86. Rating, explicit. Fandoms, Cobra Kai and Karate Kid. Relationship, Daniel LaRusso and Johnny Lawrence. Summary, in which the early 20s competing dumpster fires of Gotta Hustle Daniel and Gotta Take My Stepdad's Money and Burn It Johnny meet again. Chapter 11. Checking balance, $402. Cash on hand, $40. Rent due, soon. He decides not to mention the tank figurine to Johnny next time he sees him, because what's there to say? Daniel doesn't want to encourage him. The guy has always been a little weird. The fish thing is a new angle, but the general pattern of behavior is deeply familiar. Johnny is out there doing his usual George of the Jungle carefree swing-through-life routine when he stumbles across Daniel. He gets fixated for a little while because Daniel's hot and generally up for it. But then Johnny smacks into a tree and his head empties. And he wanders off again, chasing some other piece of tail. It's a bit like hooking up with a seasonal weather pattern or something. On Thursday, Johnny is already very drunk by the time he wanders into the bar, and he's on his worst behavior. Monopolizing the jukebox, talking too loud, and joking too rough with his friends, knocking into tables and spilling beer, and just generally making the whole room feel kind of tense and unpleasant. Some people aren't content with existence. They have to push the borders of their self, infiltrate the space and time of everyone around them, make other people aware of them. They have to be the center of the room and make every other person in it a bystander in their own lives. Michelle keeps sending Daniel these looks, like he has any more control of the situation than any other bartender in the universe. He is one day away from the weekend and not in the mood to deal with this shit. When there is a slight break in the crowd along the bar and Johnny gets close enough, Daniel leans on his hands and snaps, "Why come in here if you're just going to fuck around and bother people? You like ruining people's night, or you just don't notice it happening?" Johnny's face crinkles in honest confusion, and how was it possible for someone to be this unaware of the world around them? "What are you talking about?" says Johnny, and he's using this tone, this fucking tone, like Daniel's his roommate bitching about someone finishing off the milk. He hooks a stool with his ankle and perches on it. He looks at Daniel expectantly. "Hey, did you see?" "Christ, just fuck off, will you?" says Daniel, and he turns to serve some other people. Johnny doesn't leave, though. And as the minutes pass and start racking up double digits, and Daniel doesn't return to let him babble at him, his stubborn expression grows more sullen. Finally, it's 10 to midnight, and Johnny calls out, "How much money I gotta drop for you to pay some attention?" Daniel looks down the bar at him, wordless. Other people look over. It's awful. "That's all you care about, right?" he continues. He lifts out his wallet and thumbs through some bills, plucks a 20 out. "Money? This enough? Well?" "You know you can ask him to leave," says Michelle quietly to Daniel. She is standing next to him shoveling ice. Her expression is perfectly blank, because sometimes the greatest show of sympathy one can give is showing none at all. "No?" continues Johnny loudly. "20 not enough?" "Okay." He brings his other hand up and it's holding a lighter, and then they are all watching a $20 bill burn and curl in the air. Daniel curses and starts toward him. Johnny drops the half-burned bill carelessly on the bar in front of him and starts digging out another bill. "I think I got a 50 in here somewhere." Daniel doesn't check his steps, just grabs the bar's water hose along the way and points it at him, dousing the smoking 20 and the drunk asshole in one easy move. Johnny flinches backwards off his stool, whipping his hair out of his eyes. He looks down at his soaked front and then blinks up at Daniel, gobsmacked. "I'm cutting you off," says Daniel. Get out. He's in a bad mood for the rest of the shift, and he goes to bed in a bad mood, and wakes up in a bad mood. Juan tries messing with him at lunch, and he nearly takes his head off, at which point Sean drags him out into the back lot and slaps a pack of Parliaments in his hand. You need to chill, he says. You get that everyone here is bigger than you, right? And at some point, being a kid doesn't outweigh being an asshole. Daniel flips a pack back at him. I don't smoke. Well, maybe you should start, he says, very seriously. He tries meditating before work that night, because it's Friday after midterms, and he knows he'll need all the help he can get. But he can't clear his mind. For a brief, terrifying moment, it feels like he reaches for the center of himself and comes up empty-handed. Chapter 12. Checking balance, $402. Cash on hand, $46. Rent due, soon. When he gets to the bar that evening, Johnny has already infiltrated the place. He is at the front curve of the bar on the stool nearest the door, like he wasn't sure of his welcome. Chin on his folded arms, talking at Michelle as she fills a flight of shots. As Daniel watches, she shakes her head and says something that makes his shoulders slump. But he doesn't leave. So clearly whatever she said isn't convincing enough. Daniel ducks into the storeroom to toss his jacket on a hook. When he comes out, he's moving fast down the hallway, hands making quick work of his shirt sleeves. Are you kidding me? He snaps as Johnny catches sight of him and straightens up on his stool. Daniel points to the door. Get out, man. What the hell is wrong with you? Look, I'm sorry, Johnny says in a rush, leaning forward. I'm really, really sorry, okay? I'm sorry. Oh, look at that. He learned a new word, Daniel says to Michelle, but to his shock, she shakes her head and says, I'm staying out of it. She casts Johnny an indecipherable, narrow look and adds, I mean, unless he's causing trouble again, then obviously he's banned for life. I really am sorry, okay? I was a dick. A fucking dick. I get that, continues Johnny. And if Daniel had had more time to spare, he'd ask him why the fuck he's even bothering with all this. But he doesn't, because there are already two people waiting along the bar to be served, so he just rolls his eyes and moves along. Johnny nurses a beer for the next couple hours, generally looking like a kicked dog that Daniel wants to kick again, but only because he knows the dog is one of those big, mean ones that can smell fear. And yeah, maybe it's not the dog's fault it was raised to be an asshole, but if it's him or the dog, Daniel knows who he's gonna fucking pick. The bar gets packed enough, he forgets all about Johnny and starts to wonder about the fire code. Does an alarm go off when they hit occupancy, or is it one of those soft rules that no one really follows? College midterms make people this crazy? He says at Michelle in passing at one point, even though he already knows the answer. Just wait until after finals. She shouts back and, no thanks. Daniel doesn't want to think about what he'll feel like after a couple of months of this place. Trouble comes in around 10:30, when one guy crossing the bar back from the bathroom has the temerity to accidentally brush the shoulder of another guy, and words pass. And then through that miraculous alchemy of crappy bars, suddenly there's a fight. And Daniel will not be able to really explain what happens next, not even to Mr. Miyagi. Even though he will try to put it into words for him, he'll try so hard. He rounds the bar to break up the fight. He's tired and distracted and carrying the impatient confidence of every sober person who has ever looked upon a drunk, and forgot that just because they look and sound stupid doesn't mean they aren't capable of breathtaking acts of violence. Anyway, at some point, Daniel takes a hard fist to the face. Stunning pain explodes across his cheek, his head whips to the side, and he staggers back into a couple stools. Hands catch his back to steady and push in equal measure, and the sound of the bar grows and somehow phases into a different crowd altogether. And he's surrounded. There's no way out of this but through. The bar floor is spongy like a mat beneath his feet. The packed room smells of sweat, and it's so loud in here. It's so loud. Daniel snaps back to it with a kick to the nearest guy's face. He arcs over onto a table, nose first, cartilage crunch. And Daniel doesn't stop there. Because people like this, they'll always come back at you if you let them, if you don't take care of it. Nip it in the bud. So he grabs the guy's head and drags him bodily from the table and delivers another blow. But then the guy's buddy is swinging in from the side. So Daniel drops the first idiot and leans back to get the new one with a knee into the gut. Momentum fuck, and hammers a blow to his kidneys while he's bent over. He's about to finish him with a kick. But there are strong arms wrapping around his arms and pulling him up, pulling him away, and a broad chest against his back, which makes his throat close up. But it's Johnny. It's just Johnny in his ear. That stupid voice he'd recognize anywhere rambling. Jesus, LaRusso, stop. Fuck, you gotta stop. They're done, man. Fuck. You're done, okay? And Michelle's here, ordering people out of the bar and threatening to call the cops. And people are staring between him and the guys on the floor. And everyone's talking. And it's all still so loud. Daniel sags for a moment against Johnny, until the other guy's arms somehow both relax and tighten around him. They begin to feel like something else entirely, and Daniel pushes roughly out of the embrace. He makes a beeline for the back door at the end of the hallway. He needs some air. He needs to breathe. He needs. In the alley, he leans against the wall and puts his hands together almost like he's praying. But he's too fucked up to try and say anything in that direction just now. He blows through his palms and knocks his fingers against his forehead. He closes his eyes and focuses on the feeling of the building at his back, the damp smell of the alley, puddles from the rain shower they had had earlier that day, and the dumpsters at the end. He feels a telltale prickle behind his eyes, and it's really the final straw. Nothing even happened. He's fine, and the assholes are gone, so Jesus, fuck this. He shoves away from the wall and slams his way back into the bar. Chapter 13. Checking balance, $402. Cash on hand, $53. Rent due, soon. The bar is completely empty, except for Michelle and Johnny. The former is sweeping up, and the latter is standing around, fidgeting uselessly, until he sees Daniel again, at which point he rounds the bar like he owns the place and starts banging around beneath it. Even crazier, Michelle lets him. "What's going on?" says Daniel. "Where is everybody? What the hell?" "I made an executive decision," says Michelle, pausing with the broom. "Are you allowed to do that?" "Roy tries to give me shit about it, I'll just quit," she says hotly, and all right, he gets it. She's middle class. "I mean, did you know we are the only bar on this strip that doesn't employ a bouncer on the weekends? That's employment endangerment or something. He's basically asking for some kind of lawsuit or municipal sanction or something." "How do you even know that?" Michelle points wordlessly at Johnny, who is coming back around the bar with a bag full of ice. "Oh, great. So we're making decisions based on the advice of this fountain of wisdom. That's great, Michelle. Good one. You know, some of us actually need this job. Hey, what are..." Because Johnny is making him sit on a stool while holding the ice to his face. "Your face is kind of swelling, dude. Just go with it. Promise. I won't stop you bitching." But it does stop him bitching, mostly because he's too surprised to continue with whatever he was saying before. But eventually, he stops blinking up at Johnny and looks back at Michelle. "Did you call the cops?" What, so they could come drag my co-worker away to a holding cell and leave me to clean and lock up on my own? People don't get arrested for bar fights, laughs Johnny, and they both just sort of look at him for a long moment. Have you ever faced a single consequence, asks Daniel, for anything in your life? Anything. I mean, you're like one long consequence, says Johnny. And when Daniel tries to get up, he tugs him easily back into place. Daniel only allows it because he's exhausted and sort of picked enough fights for one day. You know we need to tell Roy about it, though, right? Michelle says after a moment. I mean, we had to kick everybody out on the Friday after midterms. It's not exactly a low-profile night to shut down early. Think he'll fire me? Asks Daniel, and in that moment he really can't summon any feelings about the prospect one way or another. She shrugs. Even odds he fires you, or gives you a raise to double as the bouncer I'm gonna make him get. You'd make, like, the worst bouncer in the world, says Johnny, sounding almost odd, and actually, for once, Daniel completely agrees with him. Since they've made this pact to probably lose their jobs anyway, Daniel goes home early. Somehow, Johnny tags along, and he allows it. He drops his keys next to the door and drags off his shoes and goes into the bathroom to piss and wash his hands. He inspects the swelling bruise along his cheekbone and feels preemptively fed up with all the explaining he'll have to do this weekend. He looks at his frown and thinks, I'm going to get wrinkles in this shape if I'm not careful. When he comes back out, Johnny is poking around his fridge. Do you eat? He asks when he realizes Daniel is standing there. Because this fridge is pathetic. You don't even have ketchup. I have never seen a fridge without a bottle of ketchup before. What, you hungry? He asks, distracted. He steps up to fill a glass of water. There might be something in the freezer you could heat up. No, that's... never mind. He fidgets and watches Daniel down the water, but he doesn't reach out and grab him. In fact, he turns and wanders across the room, and Daniel turns to watch, puzzled, behind his water glass. He sets the glass down. Look, are we fucking or what? He asks finally. And when Johnny turns and gives him a funny look, he says, What? Sorry, just, you look kind of banged up right now, and it doesn't exactly turn my crank, if you know what I mean. Daniel thinks of the dull pain pulling at his face. So why are you here? You know, he says, flopping down sideways over the armchair. I used to think you were just, like, insanely hard up for my dick, like the horniest person I ever fucking met. But now I'm starting to think you're also just not that smart. Daniel's stomach twists, old shame, and some of it must make it to his face because Johnny winces and starts up from the chair. And that's even worse. This whole night is so fucked. So Daniel goes into his bedroom and shuts the door on his face. Comes his dumb voice through the door. You drove,
Get a cab. You can afford it, shouts Daniel back.
He strips off his jeans and shirt and throws them viciously into the corner, and then lies on the bed and very stupidly does not fall immediately into a dreamless sleep that obliterates the world. He glares at the ceiling. He glances at the shadow, still darkening the crack beneath his door. It's not fair. In some parallel dimension, Daniel has a girlfriend cooing over his bruise and combing her fingers through his hair. They're probably already engaged to be married. The ceremony will include the full mass to please his ma. Daniel hates that Daniel. He wants to build a bridge to that dimension and destroy his stupid, perfect life.
Are you seriously going to make me stand here all night?
Asks Johnny, and then as if to disprove his own whining, he audibly slumps against the door and slides to the floor, and oh my God. Daniel climbs off the bed and opens the door. Johnny blinks up at him, eyes taking in his bare skin and widening.
Just get in here, he says, and turns back to the bed in defeat.
Chapter 14. Checking balance, $402. Cash on hand, $53. Rent due soon. He wakes up to Johnny's morning wood, and the prospect of the day that lies ahead is enough to get him reaching for the lube on his nightstand. Johnny stirs as he is rolling the condom down over his dick. He squints up at him.
Am I still dreaming?
Yes, he says, swinging a leg over. Go back to sleep. And of course he doesn't. But it's okay, because a stationary Johnny dildo isn't as good as when he rolls his hips and pulls Daniel down onto his cock, like he can fill all the space inside him. And maybe he isn't a morning person, or something, because for once he doesn't speak at all. Just sucks in air between gritted teeth and grunts a little. Afterwards, Johnny says, I'm starving. Let's get breakfast. And Daniel, who is already thinking about the day that lies ahead again, says, Fine, yeah, whatever. There isn't any place to eat near his apartment, and Daniel is too old to be getting breakfast at McDonald's anyway. So he drives him down to Westwood, where they can dine alongside the droves of hungover college students getting breakfast at noon and dressing it up as brunch. He needs to go talk to Roy anyway, so it's a bird murder by stone sort of situation. His brain does not want to accept the reality that he is about to go grovel for a job he hates to a man he doesn't respect. And this is mainly what he is thinking about when he discovers that Johnny thinks of himself as some kind of boyfriend. How it happens is this. You know, every time my life starts to fall apart, you show up, says Daniel. Johnny dumps two little cups of creamer into his coffee and stirs it with his butter knife. Yeah, and every time you act really difficult and run away. Not too quick on the uptake, are you? What the hell are you talking about? Daniel sips his own coffee and thinks, Who the fuck is running away? Daniel doesn't run from anything. His life would be so much better if he did, like, hello. Johnny throws his arms out. Never mind they're an annoying, cutesy cafe that doesn't allot each table the space for such come-at-me gestures. An oversight. Your life starts falling apart, I show up. Clearly, you're supposed to date me. I could be, like, supportive and shit. He blinks over his mug at him. What? How are you this dumb? Pleads Johnny, leaning forward and meeting his eyes and, what? What? You should be more appreciative. You know, you're lucky I like you. You like me, says Daniel. And as Johnny literally drops his head and hits it against the table, and the caffeine starts to trickle through Daniel's brain, he says, My God, man, why? Do you have brain damage? What the fuck's wrong with you? All we do is fuck and argue, and half of the arguing is just me insulting you. This is not symmetrical, you fucking moron, he adds. Here's your eggs, says the waitress. Johnny lifts his head to give the girl space for the plate. Daniel pinches his lips and stares at the table until she's gone. You know, when you're around, I always come off like such an asshole to people. He asks Johnny. LaRusso, you are an asshole, he says, in the same confounding tone he's been using for the whole conversation. But. And suddenly he is reaching across the tiny, inconvenient table and fumbling for, that's his hand. But you're kind of my asshole. Daniel sets the mug down and stands. I have to go beg for my job. I can't do this right now. Somehow, this is a part of the whole scene that renders Johnny confused. He looks down at the eggs and up at Daniel. But you haven't even eaten your breakfast. His eyes widen. You don't have, like, food issues, do you? Daniel staggers out of the cafe past the waitress who tries not to stare, and goes across the street to offer himself up for crucifixion. Suddenly, it feels like the bright spot in the day. Roy doesn't fire him, but it's a near thing. He says if the two guys from last night come forward to press charges, he's going to throw Daniel to the wolves. And he manages to say this like he's doing him a favor.
But the worst part by a mile is the very end, when Daniel thanks him. Johnny is waiting by his car. Daniel gives him a wide berth as he rounds it, fumbling for his keys and trying not to look too unnerved. "How'd it go?" he asks. And he's asking because he thinks he's his boyfriend. "Terrible. I still have the job." "If you hate it so much, why not just quit?" And he's asking because what? He thinks he's his boyfriend? They get in the car. Daniel stares at the street. After a moment, he slides a wary look over at Johnny, who sort of smiles at him. "What the fuck?" "Oh," he says, reaching to a small white paper bag at his feet. He opens it and takes out a muffin, which he passes to Daniel. "Since you didn't eat breakfast." Daniel accepts the muffin numbly. He starts his car. "So, what are we doing now?" asks Johnny. He's asking because he thinks he's his boyfriend. "I'm dropping you off," says Daniel, nibbling on the muffin. He hits his indicator and pulls into the street. "And then I'm going to ask Mr. Miyagi for an intervention." Chapter 15. "Not as bad as it looks, okay?" he says when he comes out into the back of the dojo, and Mr. Miyagi looks up with a slight smile, only to straighten solemnly. He knows what his face looks like, and he anticipates spending most of Sunday getting grief for it. Somehow, the look on Mr. Miyagi's face is worse than hours of his ma fretting. Daniel crosses the boards and drops down to sit on the step beside where the man is trimming the lawn edge. "Got some chores for me to do. You know me. I got busy hands. They don't know when to quit." "Daniel-san." He sighs and looks up, squinting at the sun to meet his eyes. "Been fighting again." And he sounds worried rather than disappointed, but honestly, Daniel would prefer the latter. He doesn't need anyone worrying about him, like he can't take care of his own life. "It's not like that, really. Not what you think. I was actually stopping the fight, okay? Like, these two guys were starting to really get into it, and I thought, hey, I know how to put an end to this. Neither of them know karate. I happened to catch a fist in the middle is all. It's nothing. Really, it's nothing, Mr. Miyagi, okay?" He thinks about it, though. He thinks about the thing he's been thinking about all day. The thing he woke up thinking about. It's like the random hit last night knocked something loose in his brain, and now it's just rattling around in there with every turn of his head. He doesn't know how to bring it up, though. It would seem so random. Daniel bringing up his most shameful moments, dragging it all out for inspection again, making Mr. Miyagi remember it, too. "You've been very tired lately," observes Mr. Miyagi, stepping back past him to reach for a water jug. He puts a glass in Daniel's hand and fills it. "Yeah, well," says Daniel, looking at the stream of water. I got a second job." And now Mr. Miyagi looks disappointed. Daniel was wrong about preferring it. "Don't look at me like that, all right? It's just for a little while, just to save up some. Can't find balance if take on too much. Remember college?" "Yeah, how could I forget?" Real parade of past successes going through his head these days. "But this isn't anything like that. It's just a little bartending in the evenings. It's not a big deal. I can't find balance living paycheck to paycheck for the rest of my life either, you know." Normally, he and Mr. Miyagi, they had a certain rhythm to their conversations. It went something like, Daniel would unload for a while, just really let go, and Mr. Miyagi would pretend he's not really listening, and then in the end he'd say something devastatingly succinct that neatly swept all of Daniel's complaints and problems into a neat little pile, and then blew them into the air, like dust motes. It didn't really work if Daniel couldn't start the process, if he couldn't remember how to speak. On Sunday, he puts on a tie for church, like the little extra effort might offset the purpling bruise on his cheek. His ma, never a dumb woman, is not fooled for a second. "You shouldn't be working in a place like that, Daniel," she whispers past the hymnal. "Places where fights break out, it's not nice. I don't like the idea of you there, all alone. Oh, I wasn't alone, he whispers back. There was like a couple hundred people there with me. A couple hundred people, plus Johnny Lawrence. Your poor, beautiful face. Ma, you're killing me. And then, because it's been a while, and he's feeling out of sorts and willing to try anything to fix it, he goes to confession. He kicks his heels, waiting his turn, thinks about bailing about 5 or 10 times. Then finally Mr. Lewis exits the box, and Christ, the guy must be some kind of serial killer or closet case, the frequency he goes to confession. Daniel's not judging, but also, Daniel is very much judging. Then it's his turn. He goes behind the screen and kneels. Father Hall welcomes him and makes a sign of the cross. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been, 2 months since my last confession. Though I don't think that should be held against me, it's not like I'm out there sinning it up, I've just been busy. And I feel like, by having to start every confession by mentioning how long it's been, you're kind of getting biased about my case. Daniel, sighs Father Hall. I thought you're supposed to pretend you don't know who it is. What's the point of the screen? The screen is for your comfort, and also to help you imagine you're confessing your sins directly to Christ. But if you insist in coming in here every time and picking an argument, I'm not going to pretend to not know who you are. Who's arguing? Daniel, we've talked about this. The confessional is not a place where one argues. Not with me, and certainly not with God. If there are theological matters you wish to debate, my door is always open. I mean, I'm kind of busy, Father. I just said that. But I am aware, yes, that you are a very hard-working young man. So, how about you do 10 Hail Marys as penance? Father, I haven't confessed to anything yet, he protests. Right, he says. Well, go ahead, my son. But the mood is kind of ruined. Anyway, so that's his weekend. He tried, and everyone should just get off his back. Chapter 16. Checking balance, $295. Cash on hand, $21. Rent due, soon. Daniel wakes up on Monday, and it's there waiting for him, like it's been standing just to the side, in the wings. He hasn't thought about it for so long, and it's not that he thought he never would again, but he isn't prepared for the immediacy of it. One moment he's asleep, then his alarm is going, his eyes open, and he is thinking about getting beaten in front of a room full of people. He is thinking about the moments he fell, and fell again to the mat, curling in on himself, and wishing with all he had in him that it could be over, that he could be done. He's thinking about the senseless onslaught of blows, and how the world had no rules anymore. He is thinking about being chased off the mat, stumbling, anything to avoid more pain, please, and being caught by a pair of strong arms, and looking into cold eyes that held nothing but cruel loathing. And what did Daniel even do? What was he to have drawn all this? And he's thinking about how he woke up a week after the tournament, desperately hard from a dream, about the man responsible for all of it. It takes him nearly 20 minutes to get out of bed. He stands in the shower, head bowed under the spray of the water, staring at his feet. At some point, the water starts fucking around, spitting and shifting abruptly from scalding to ice cold and back again, and he shuts it off. He is 15 minutes late to work, but maybe his face says something he doesn't know. The guys don't give him any grief for it. When the mid-morning break comes round, Sean finds him out in the back lot and offers him a cigarette. And after considering it for a few seconds, and ultimately finding no reason not to, Daniel accepts it. It tastes awful and makes him cough a little. He keeps smoking. The physical discomfort is a good distraction as any, and monitoring the progress of the burning end gives him something to do. In his apartment after work, he reheats a serving of the chicken cacciatore he and his mom made the evening before. He feeds Roxanne. He tries to do a catca, but he can't focus. It's there waiting for him every time he closes his eyes. His pulse starts to go thready, and he leaves for work before he loses all control. He's somehow forgotten all about Johnny and remembers the situation only when he walks into the bar and the other guy's there, filling out some kind of paperwork while he fills out his shirt. Treating the bar as an office now? He asks him after he's deposited his jacket in the storeroom. I'm sure that's going to lead to great places for you down the line. Is that any way to talk to a co-worker? Asks Johnny, spinning his pen over his knuckles. He turns his stool from side to side and smirks at Daniel, who absently slides a beer over to him and says belatedly, What? Johnny spreads his arms. You're looking at your brand new weekend bouncer. Daniel stares at him, then looks over to Michelle, who is wiping down the buttons on the jukebox across the room and cursing quietly about the stickiness of dried beer. Did you know about this? He calls. I was his reference, she says over his shoulder, and what the hell is happening? What kind of feminist offers to be the reference to this guy? Was she not here for the whole previous week? Mouth flattening, he looks back at Johnny. Weekend bouncer. Yeah. So, why are you here tonight? It's Monday. You're so funny when you're being an asshole. Johnny raises a beer and pauses. Which is most of the time. You don't even need the money, says Daniel, pouring a shot of vodka out for himself. No, I don't. And that's what's got me thinking. Did it hurt? Johnny grins easily and points at him. Not as much as it's gonna hurt when I remove the stick that's up your ass. Anyway, so like, you're poor or whatever. Jesus, says Daniel, and he takes the shot of vodka. And I have a rich asshole of a stepdad who thinks he can buy his way to happiness. Daniel's eyebrows pinch and his hands pause over the vodka bottle. This isn't what he expected to hear, and okay, he had no expectations to begin with, but somehow this is still a little surprising. After a moment, he shifts onto his forearms. He's not listening, but he's not listening. Johnny leans forward. He reaches across the bar and tweaks Daniel's shirt collar. Daniel's eyes go from his hand to his mouth, which is starting to smile in a sort of unholy glee. What's the craziest shit you've ever wanted to do? Asks Johnny. Chapter 17. Checking balance, $295. Cash on hand, $26. Rent due soon. He's never been to this particular all-night diner before, but Johnny seems familiar enough with the place, the menu and the layout. Hard to say if he knows the waitress or is just overly familiar with everyone all the time. Daniel gives it even odds. How about a lobster dinner on the roof of the new U.S. Bank Tower? Says Daniel, sipping his coffee. He has a club sandwich sitting half-eaten in front of him, but he's not really hungry. Johnny waves a hand. Hell, I'll throw in the helicopter ride. Johnny is apparently hungry, because he's put away an astonishing amount of food over the space of an hour. All that food on top of a good amount of beer, and seriously, what the fuck is up with this guy's metabolism? Could just take the elevator, says Daniel, watching him take another bite of the burger. It has cheese and tomato and onion rings and a bleeding egg on it. It's a monstrosity, and he can't look away. You're thinking too small, man, he says around the food. Disgusting. You say rooftop lobster dinner. I say helicopter. Work with me here. Sorry to disappoint, he says dryly. He presses his eyes briefly because they're a little hot and dry. It's almost 3 o'clock in the morning. You need to go home? Asks Johnny after a moment. His eyes flick over him, oddly alert. I do not. The idea of going back to his apartment and stretching out on his bed makes him want to jump out of his skin. He'd do it like a cartoon, leave a Daniel suit drifting in the air as he speeds over and away into the distant hills. I'm fine. I'm not really tired.
You look tired, says Johnny.
He picks up his shake and mutters around the straw.
I mean, I'd totally still bang you, but yeah.
Good to know, man, he says, smiling sarcastically behind his coffee.
Thanks.
Anytime, he smirks.
Really? Anytime.
Daniel rubs his face and shakes his head. He gives up. He glances out the dark window to the parking lot.
So, tell me, what the hell did you say to Michelle last week? To get her on your side, I mean. You bribing her or something? Giving money to ASPCA in her name or what?
He shrugs and drops the shake back onto the table.
Maybe I'll tell you sometime. Oh, Johnny Lawrence, man of mystery. That's how it is.
Johnny leans forward over the table like he's being so, so charming.
Yeah, maybe.
You have mustard on your chin. After a second, his smile falters and he reaches for a napkin. But then it's like he's wiping away his consternation along with the condiment because he's smiling at Daniel again. A different smile, though.
What?
He asks after a moment, and maybe he's a little unsettled, but he wouldn't cop to it in a million years.
How long were you sitting on that, the mustard? Like, were you waiting for the perfect moment to mention it?
It is Daniel's turn to shrug, and Johnny's to shake his head.
You're such an asshole, man.
Don't you mean your asshole? Would be the one retort he could make here, but it feels like a weird thing to joke about. Too much like flirting, and Daniel doesn't flirt. He goes out and snaps his fingers and says, "All right, who's going to give it to me?" And usually someone obliges, because men are just like that. They don't need to like you, or try.
Okay, how about?
He leans back in the booth, because Johnny's still leaning forward, and it's...
Anyway, how about you buy me a boat? Like, a nice boat.
Johnny grins.
Now you're talking. Sex on a boat. That's gonna be so...
Then we light it on fire and send it to the Cabrio Yacht Marina. Fire ship.
Kaboom!
And as Johnny shuts his mouth and considers this, Daniel taps his finger on his mug.
Come on, man. How committed are you here?
Could we have sex on the boat before we destroy it? He checks, tone a little wistful.
I mean, sighs Daniel. I guess you could fuck me over the bow or something.
Johnny nods. Okay, then
yes, sure.
Daniel toasts this choice with his mug. He doesn't see much of Johnny's place when they stumble in because the lights are off, and anyway he's walking backwards, head down, and pulling roughly at Johnny's belt. His body is buzzing from caffeine and lack of sleep and arousal, and every time he brushes a hand against the front of Johnny's jeans and feels the thick cock burning up for him, he drops another few seconds of thought. Johnny loses patience with his hands or something, because he's not going fast enough for him, because he's suddenly turning him around and shoving him up against the wall. His mouth goes to the back of his neck, sucking with bruising force. He writhes backwards and curses.
Fucking yes. Come on, Jesus, Johnny, get on with it.
And he's dragging at his own jeans. Barely gets them halfway down his thighs before Johnny flattens his chest against the wall again, cock riding his ass, hand reaching to tug on him.
Bet you'd take it dry if I let you, wouldn't you? Says Johnny.
You desperate, cock-hungry twink. You'd do it, wouldn't you?
You fucking asshole. Yes, yes, Jesus. You're so lucky you have me,
he says. And Daniel flips down to the floor before he can register any of that. He holds Daniel's hips down with one hand while swallowing his cock and uses his free hand to finger him until he's practically crying. After he's come down Johnny's throat, he sort of just lies there, limp and exhausted, mind blissfully empty of all thought. At some point, Johnny steps over him to go into the kitchen or something and rummage around. A light clicks off, and then he's back, pulling Daniel up by the arm. Okay, Raggedy Ann, let's go. Raggedy Andy, you mean? Mutters Daniel, cracking his eyes open. You wish. Daniel tries to help with the walking thing, but he doesn't try all that hard. Johnny seems to have matters well in hand, and anyway, fuck him. His life's plenty easy. He can help a guy out once in a while. It's the least he can do. That's penance. Father Hall himself might agree. Okay, no, he probably definitely wouldn't. Did you say Father LaRusso? Are you telling me you go to church? No wonder you're such a nut job. Daniel lets his head roll back along his neck and says, But however much sin increased, grace was always greater. Wow. Okay, says Johnny over his head, his grip turning a little stiff. What the hell? And he sounds so thoroughly unnerved, Daniel wakes up enough to crack the fuck up. Chapter 18. Checking balance, $295. Cash on hand, $26. Rent due, soon. At 7, he wakes up to an unfamiliar alarm in a familiar king-sized bed. Even the sheets might be the same, and he suspects if he was to inspect them more closely, they might not even been washed in the intervening time. Gross. Mr. I'll buy you a boat can't employ a fucking maid? He sits up and swings his leg out and squints across the empty room. No Johnny. Christ, he thought the guy was kidding about the morning runs. He goes into the bathroom and pisses and stares at his bedhead and pillow-lined face and decides not to think further. He flushes and goes to find some breakfast. The kitchen is even worse than the bedroom. Christ, Johnny, you live like this? He mutters, knocking through the dirty dishes amassed on the counter. He finds a coffee machine and starts it. As he waits, he absently starts tidying. He's an idiot before coffee is the only excuse. By the time the coffee is ready, he has cleared the counter of dishes and emptied and refilled the dishwasher. Guy's got a fucking dishwasher. There's no excuse for this shit. And also collected all the empty beer bottles from the counter and table and put them in the recycling. He's just pouring himself a mug when Johnny appears on the edge of the room, sweaty and flushed from his run. He's shirtless, and his dick is a boastful, plump presence in the front of his running shorts. He looks around the kitchen, a stupid, confused look creasing his face. Daniel suppresses a sigh and leans back against the counter to drink his coffee and not glare at his pebbled pink nipples. I feel like one of the seven dwarves, says Johnny, wandering closer. Leave a guest alone with the place and come back to find all the cobwebs swept. I didn't touch your damn cobwebs, and the seven dwarves had jobs. He smirks and braces his arm on either side of Daniel at the counter. He bounces his eyebrows. And now so do I. And that's right. Damn it. Even his sweat somehow smells clean. The man isn't human. Daniel knocks back the coffee and slips nimbly under his arm like someone navigating a limbo bar. I gotta go to work. Aw, come on, he says, catching him with those long arms. He curls around his back, and that boastful dick gets a hell of a lot more smug the moment it's up against Daniel's boxer-clad ass. Against his will, his eyes shut. This is such a bad idea. The whole thing is a bad, bad idea. Make better choices. He imagines Mr. Miyagi and his ma and Father Hall counseling him. If they were to find out about this, which they never, ever will. But when Johnny breathes, his firm chest presses against Daniel's back. His big hand slips down into his boxers to cup him. And in that second, if there was a way he could drive to work while reverse cowgirling Johnny up the 405, Daniel knows he'd do it. Okay, he says quickly, driving off the wagon. All right, just make it fast, okay? We have to make it fast. And he's towing Johnny back to the bedroom. And when's the last time you washed your fucking sheets anyway? Can't believe I'm banging Snow White, crows Johnny, hands gleefully occupied, copping a feel.
Suck it, other dwarves.
Late again, Danny? Says Sean.
Oh, he's definitely got himself a girl, says Juan,
turning his flashlight away from the hood of the Buick he's working on to shine it in Daniel's direction.
Look at that face. It's got a glow. And so will yours after I shove that thing up your ass,
he says, passing them to punch in. He needs to do better than this, he thinks. Tomorrow, he is going to do better. No sex with Johnny, a full night's sleep, work on time, a mantra for winning at life. Back in his apartment, he feeds Roxanne and reheats dinner and spends half an hour cleaning his entire kitchen, feeling like he needs to make up for wasting energy on someone else's place. He sanitizes the sink and counter and sweeps, and even wipes down the stove hood, which he always forgets to do until it acquires a baked-on coating of dust. Then he moves on to the small living room. He takes a shower and shaves. His hand stutters slightly when he notices a red mark. Johnny sitting up while grinding in deep, splaying his hand over Daniel's neck, firm but not constricting, and bending his head to mouth at his shoulder. And fine, Daniel's wearing a shirt with a collar tonight, no big deal. No sex with Johnny, a full night's sleep, work on time, he thinks as he leaves for the bar.
Have you heard of yoga? Asks Michelle.
They are seated at opposite ends of the bar and passing one of the little balls from the foosball table back and forth. Neither of them are very good at catching it. Daniel doesn't know what her excuse is, but he figures he should be better than this. His hand-eye coordination only good at tracking fists or what? I do karate, he says and tosses the ball back. It bounces once, hollow, and she grabs it before it can roll off the bar.
Good for you, tough guy, she says.
I'm talking about me. Do you think I should try yoga?
I don't really know what that is. The thing with the stretching?
It's more than that. It's... She searches for a moment for what it is and throws the ball back at him. It flies between his ear and open hand and skids across the room. He sighs and gets up to grab it. When he gets back to his stool, she says, It's about inner peace and breathing.
Sounds like a real good time, he says.
But then he kind of feels like a hypocrite, because that's a lot like what the Katka is supposed to give him. But it's different. Karate is cool. Yoga is. And while he's trying to think of what yoga is, he throws the ball again. What do you need inner peace for anyway? It's overrated. You find inner peace, and then before you know it, you'll be a soccer mom and forget to fight for women's lib.
Okay, one, you're like at least one wave behind the nomenclature there, Daniel. And two, you think soccer moms can't fight for equal rights? That's kind of sexist.
It's not sexist, it's class consciousness, he counters. And look at him, using the 10 pages of Marx he read 2.5 years ago. Soccer moms are too comfortable. They don't want to rock the boat. She narrows her eyes at him. Stalemate. He throws the ball and she fails to catch it again. It bounces off one of the beer taps and lands in the ice bucket behind the bar.
I don't really want to do yoga, she admits after a moment, sighing. I just want to wear the flared pants.
He nods. He gets it. Johnny never shows up, which, what else did he expect? Anyway, his new life mantra is off to a great start. No sex with Johnny. Check. Full night's sleep. Here he comes.
Chapter 19. Checking balance, $258. Cash on hand, $29. Rent due soon. On Wednesday, he comes back from work at the garage to find Johnny sitting in the hallway outside his apartment door. There is a brown paper sack on the floor beside him. What's in the bag? Asks Daniel, digging out his keys.
No, wait. Let me guess. Fabergé egg?
Johnny looks up at him, eyes making a Sunday drive out of the journey. Don't take this the wrong way, he begins, and this is how Daniel knows to prepare himself to take it the wrong way.
But I really, really want to fuck you in the jumpsuit.
He sighs and lets him into the apartment. He tosses his keys to the side and crosses to dig out his dinner from the fridge, spoon some of it into a bowl and stick it in the microwave. When he turns around again, Johnny is over by Roxanne's tank, holding a long loop of plastic tubing. "What are you doing?" asks Daniel. Johnny looks over. "When's the last time you cleaned this tank?" "Are you actually kidding me right now?" He puts his hands on his hips. "Have you looked around your own apartment, Johnny? You gonna start giving me grief about that damn fish tank? You?" He waggles the tubing at him. "Don't get jealous, Russo. I'm fully prepared to make your tank nice, too. Like, why haven't you painted or bought better furniture? Your bed sucks." "If you're not here to blow me or do something actually useful, then I'm gonna have to ask you to see yourself out. I've had a crap sleep all week, and I was going to take a nap before work." Johnny fidgets with the tubing, looking genuinely torn, and Daniel experiences a new type of mortification he hadn't even known existed. Cleaning fish shit or sucking his dick. A tough decision, apparently. Nice. The microwave dings, and he gratefully retrieves his bowl. He grabs a spoon from his drawer and crosses to his bedroom at warp speed, hugging his dinner to his chest. I, says Johnny, turning to watch him. "Offer's off the table," he says shortly, and shuts the bedroom door firmly behind him. He eats hunkered down in the middle of his bed like some kind of gargoyle, listening to Johnny putter and splash and curse in the other room. He wonders what the absolute fuck is going on here anyway. Johnny doesn't leave and, in fact, gives all indications of riding to the bar with Daniel. By the time they exit the apartment, he has installed a new plant in Roxanne's tank as well as a water filter. "And how much is that thing going to add to my electric bill?" Daniel asks as he reaches for his coat. "I'll make it up to you," says Johnny, crowding him as he heads for the door. "Think of all the money on batteries you're going to save by getting fucked by me instead of your vibrator." "I don't have a..." He glances back at Johnny's smug expression. "Jesus, you're a fucking snoop." On the drive, he finally asks Johnny something he's been wondering for a while. Namely, his conspicuous lack of wheels. "You had a pretty fancy car. What happened to it? Or is this another inexplicable thing that turns you on, getting driven around?" He pauses a second. "Oh, gross. Is this some kind of chauffeur kink? Like a servant thing?" Johnny blinks at him. "I lost my license." "Oh." He wasn't expecting this answer. He doesn't know what to do with it. "Yeah." Johnny grunts and slouches, arm going up on the window, fingers drumming the top of the car. "I sorta, rolled the car. Totaled it." "You were drunk, I'm assuming," he says, sour with it. "This fucking guy. They don't take your license away because you hit a deer in the road, LaRusso." He doesn't even have the decency to sound ashamed about it. "You know, you could have killed yourself or someone else. You people going around without any consideration of how your actions affect others." He glances at Johnny, who is looking out the passenger window. "How long ago was this anyway?" He shrugs. "A month, maybe a little more." "A month?" He gives him a quick once over. "What? You telling me you rolled your car and came out of it without any broken bones?" "Wasn't a scratch on me," says Johnny. "Guess I was lucky." Daniel shakes his head out the window. "But hey," says Johnny, brightening, "I'm glad you're so concerned." "I am not concerned, I'm disgusted. This is contempt you hear in my voice, Johnny. Though if you think it sounds like concern, that really goes a long way to explaining this bizarre misunderstanding you seem to be harboring about being some kind of boyfriend," he supplies. "Lover. Partner." "Yeah," says Daniel, stomach tensing. He stares ahead. "One of those." Johnny turns a little in the seat, pointing that broad chest at him. "Look, I know the last time we dated it didn't end so well." "There
was no last time, you delusional lunatic, says Daniel loudly. He wants to slam his head against the wheel, but he can't do that to the Ford. Look, seriously, what is this? You get off on people being mean to you or what?
I get off on you, he says, in a disorienting tone of one who thinks he's uttering something irresistibly romantic.
Look, think of it this way. What's the downside? You have too much regular sex? I'm a dedicated source of orgasms here. This dick don't quit, baby.
And what kind of person is Daniel, that this is the argument Johnny goes with? He thinks briefly about slamming the two of them into one of the concrete pylons separating the street from the pedestrian traffic, drawing the curtains on this particular comedy skit. But he also can't do that to the Ford.
I can't exactly meet someone else if I'm hanging around you all the time, he says.
LaRusso, you work like a million hours a week. You're not meeting anyone anyway. And now his tone sounds off, stilted, like he's jealous or something. Daniel shifts aggressively, refusing to feel bad.
Well, thanks for the rundown on my incredibly depressing life, Johnny.
It's only depressing because you let it be.
Yep, that's it. Daniel's had enough for one afternoon. He's not about to sit here and take advice from a guy who rolls cars and only got a part-time job because he confused mind-blowing sex with a relationship.
He hits his indicator and pulls over to the side of the street. Johnny looks at the row of shops, unsuspecting, and then Daniel tells him to get out. Johnny crosses his eyes to look at the finger pointing past his face and then squints over at him.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. Get out. He looks around again, lost.
Where am I supposed to go from here?
This street's on a bus route. You have plenty of options.
A bus?
And his tone ends any lingering doubt Daniel has with this choice. People who use that tone about public transportation don't have actual feelings. He begins shoving his shoulder, and Johnny tolerates it, shifting over the seat, hand going to the door.
Okay, okay, Jesus.
Johnny climbs out, but then he ducks his head back down and says, Oh, don't make any plans for tonight after your shift. I've got something planned.
Shut the door!
He snaps, and once he has, Daniel peels back into traffic, because he's late for work, again. Chapter 20, Spring Break, 1988. For the better part of a week, in March, when Johnny is 20, Daniel LaRusso becomes his live-in girlfriend. Okay, back up. So he's down at the beach, right? And it's really crowded because all the college kids in the country are doing that thing where they go insane and swarm the place from all over and party like they are majoring in going topless. And Johnny loves it. Of course he does. The weather is perfect, the sand is delightful, and the drinks are flowing. He's playing volleyball with a group of people he kind of knows. That is, he knows Bobby and Bobby's girlfriend, Heather, and the rest are fine. It's beach volleyball. You don't need to know people. You just need to be able to look hot and spike a ball, and look hot while spiking a ball. Not everyone can. It's tricky. Johnny can. Anyway, so he's down at the beach. And so is Daniel LaRusso. Someone from the other team bumps the volleyball with too much force, and it goes flying way out of bounds and hits some guy, knocking his drink all down his bare chest. Johnny runs up to retrieve the ball and apologizes, except holy shit, it's him. It is totally him. Daniel looks down at his vodka-shiny chest, and then up again at Johnny, expression pissy behind his aviators. The expression deepens as he seems to recognize him, like he thinks maybe the ball was a deliberate hit.
Whoa, sorry, says Johnny, and then, I don't have a towel, but if you want, I'll lick it off for you.
Daniel wipes his pecs absently, his brow pinched.
You go around making that kind of offer to random guys.
Johnny bends and scoops the ball up and spins it between his fingers.
No.
I'm trying to get into fewer fights these days.
And how's that going? He shrugs. It's going. And it's been like 3 months since his last fight. He's on a roll. Daniel looks around the beach, and Johnny looks at Daniel. The lean, tan chest and his magical legs that aren't like that long, but somehow look it in those swimming trunks. Goddamn. Been a while, says Johnny, as if he hadn't returned to that one gay bar like 20 times hoping Daniel would show up. How you doing, man? Well, now I need another drink, he says, and then he's turning away and, hey, no, hang on. Johnny, calls Bobby from his position by the net. It's your serve, man. What are you doing? Shit. So Johnny turns and throws the ball up, serving from where he is. He waits to see it sail safely over the net and calls, I'm out. And then he's on course to catch up to Daniel, who is already halfway back to the bar. He glances at Johnny sidelong when he appears again, but doesn't say anything like, go away. So, hey, fair game. They lean up under the cabana bar, and Johnny doesn't waste any time pressing their shoulders together. Daniel's skin is hot from the sun, and he smells like sunscreen, vodka, and perhaps a little like weed. And it's not a combination he ever thought to find a turn on, but life is just full of surprises. So, what have you been up to? He asks as they wait for their drinks. Daniel finally shoves his sunglasses up to his forehead for the sake of rubbing the pink indentations they have left on his nose. His eyes flick to Johnny, wary and a little bloodshot, and then away. He shrugs. Nothing much. Work. School. And his mouth indents at one corner, weirdly bitter. And it would be just like him to take college more seriously than every single other person on this beach. Yeah? He counts the years. You graduating next year? And Daniel laughs a little. No, not even close. I only started last fall. Bit of a late start. Hey, I still haven't started, so power to you, man, he says. Their drinks arrive, and he takes the liberty of clinking their glasses together, giving him an easy smile as he does it. Daniel pauses, and then, miracle of miracles, his mouth twitches into this reluctant, tiny fucking smile that makes Johnny feel like he could punch the sky down around their ears. What about you? He asks Johnny, sipping his drink. What's Johnny Lawrence doing with himself these days? He gives up all pretense about what he's been up to and turns full body to face Daniel, leaning his elbow on the bar. Well, most recently, I tried to become a race car driver. Daniel laughs a little, dark eyes cutting to the side like he needs to hide them. And he seems kind of high, so maybe he does. After a moment, he glances back at him, and the amused look quiets. Wait, you serious? Johnny grins. He's going to keep him guessing about that for as long as he can. And the rest of the afternoon is so easy after that. And something so easy has to be meant to be. The crowd swells like the tide in and out of the patio beside the cabana bar. The DJ changes shifts. The tiki torches and hanging lights come on as the sinking sun turns the sky a deep pink. And Daniel relaxes on the seat across from him, smiling with a sort of wry amusement at Johnny and looking so goddamn good doing it. Okay, okay, says Daniel, shoving his latest glass into the ranks of its brothers. He looks at Johnny and holds up his fingers to count it off, mouth pulling into a sardonic grin. So, we have a race car driver, competitive ski jumper. Guess you just got back from Calgary, huh? Must have missed your name in the scores, Ace. A smoke jumper and mailman? The mailman who flies the planes, he reminds him. How do you think Hawaii gets mail? Someone has to fly the plane. Right, right, says Daniel, nodding seriously. And finally, last but certainly not least, you're an undercover drug mule for the DEA. Which is why I can never go back to Mexico, says Johnny, and he takes care to pronounce it like a local would, with the H sound.
For some reason, this makes Daniel put a hand over his eyes and shake his head a little. He finishes his latest beer, almost spilling some down his chin because he's grinning so hard.
"No, come on," says Daniel, slapping the table.
And yeah, he's a little drunk, but so is Johnny. It's all good.
"Tell me, what have you actually been doing?"
He shakes his head firmly.
"I'll never tell."
"Why not? And don't say it's classified or some shit." Johnny shuts his mouth and squints. It's equal amounts unsettling and pleasing that Daniel can guess what he was going to say, even though they barely know each other. Daniel is waiting, eyebrows arched. He says,
"You'll laugh at me."
"Johnny, I've been laughing at you for..." And then it's like he looks around and finally realizes how long they've been sitting there. His expression goes strange, eyes darting over the crowd and then returning to look at their table, the number of glasses clattering up the surface. He begins to look, and no other word for it, spooked. Johnny's apprehension grows. He's got good instincts, and he says quickly,
"I've done some modeling." And then he winces hard because, God, it sounds exactly how he thought it would.
But it works. Daniel is distracted again. He looks across at him, clearly torn between disbelief and amusement.
"You what?"
Johnny shrugs a little awkward.
"It just kind of happened. I don't know. I had nothing better going on and thought maybe I'd get to meet some babes, and I did,"
he adds, pointing at him because it was an extremely important part of the whole thing, perhaps the most important. Nothing could be that embarrassing in the pursuit of babes. It was practically in the Declaration of Independence.
"And then it just kind of kept happening."
"Just kind of kept happening," repeats Daniel slowly. His expression is indescribable.
"Like you just tripped one day into a full modeling career."
Johnny shifts in his seat. He liked it better when they were pretending he was an undercover drug mule.
I mean, yeah.
He rubs the back of his neck.
"Look, it's not as great as it sounds, okay? Lately, I can't look at any magazines with a hot chick on a beach without thinking of how long she probably had to stand there as they slathered baby oil on her arms and legs. And then you start thinking about the weather, the wind, and how much of a pain it is when the sand blows into the baby oil. So I have to wipe you down and start again and..."
And Daniel starts laughing. He laughs so hard, he almost tips off his stool.
"You want to maybe come back to my place for a couple drinks? Hang out for a while?"
Johnny asks after Daniel has finally quieted.
"I live near here."
Daniel is flushed from laughing, and his eyes are very bright upon Johnny. But at the question, he grows a little more somber. His mouth curls up on one side, almost quizzical. He cocks his head.
"What is this? You trying to put the moves on me or something?"
"Have been for a couple hours," says Johnny. "Not too quick on the uptake, huh?" Daniel clears his throat and straightens a little on his stool. He scratches his jaw and considers Johnny a moment before flicking his fingers at him.
"So it wasn't just a one-off experimental thing that time."
Christ, is that what he's been thinking? How much more obvious does he gotta be with this guy?
No. No, it was not.
He presses a hand to his heart. "I'm an equal opportunity hot person, bang." Daniel nods like this is very serious information he is taking under very serious review. Or maybe he's just kind of drunk. He folds his arms over the table and turns to look narrowly out at the beach, which is emptied greatly with the sunset. Johnny's about to say something. He doesn't really decide these things until they're already happening. When Daniel abruptly slaps the table and stands.
"Okay," he says. "Haven't been late in a while because of school. Let's see what you got, Fabio."
And Johnny doesn't question it.
"Wow, this apartment sure is something,"
says Daniel, taking in the sprawling living room with the massive leather sectional, the pool table, and fireplace and Johnny's prized possession, his Mitsubishi 35-inch Diamond Vision television set. 700 lines of horizontal resolution, baby. Count 'em. He turns to look out the wall windows at the ocean, and he stops talking.
Yeah, I guess, says Johnny, who doesn't really care.
He remembers being happy when he first moved into this place, but it turns out even beautiful oceanfront views get old when you're drunk and bored all the time. Or maybe he just stopped looking. He's looking now, because Daniel is looking, and it's better than it has been in months. They change back into their street clothes for the walk home, and Daniel is wearing a black hoodie and jeans that are slightly too long. They make him look younger, which is when Johnny realizes he'd looked older in the first place.
You want that drink? I have beer.
Daniel glances back at him. He shakes his head and steps closer.
Better not. I'm good. And if we're doing this, you probably should stop too.
Doing this? Daniel's hands come out of the front pockets of his hoodie, and then he's cupping Johnny's dick.
Oh, right, says Johnny. That.
Daniel smiles, closed mouth.
Yeah, that.
Somehow the street clothes make it hotter than it had been on the beach half naked, or in the bar looking to attract attention a couple years ago. He just looks like himself, a regular guy who's had a few, a little blurred and comfortable, handling Johnny like this is an everyday thing they have here. Daniel massages him through his shorts, lashes falling over his eyes as he watches Johnny's dick stiffen and grow.
How do you want me?
He asks. It takes a couple seconds for Johnny to respond.
In my bed?
He snorts a laugh, and it's actually kind of dorky, reassuring, at least until he says, "Never realized you were so funny before." Which just confuses Johnny, because he hasn't told any jokes. Daniel gives him one lingering, soft squeeze and steps back.
Well, lead the way.
And Johnny feels like he should be grabbing him and kissing him something. But Daniel hangs back as they cross the living room and go down the hall to the master bedroom. Johnny walks backwards to watch him because he's taking his clothing off. And it's not the kind of thing you look away from. Daniel seems to know what he's doing here, so he decides to follow his lead.
You got condoms, right?
He asks, pushing Johnny down on the bed.
Condoms? Why would they need...
Oh. Daniel looks at him, hand pausing in the air from where it had been reaching back to. He leans over Johnny to look him dead in the eyes, mouth tantalizing inches from his own.
I'm not fucking you bare, Ace. I don't do that.
No. Says Johnny hurriedly.
I wasn't, bathroom. Condoms are under the sink.
Daniel gets off the bed and looks around for the bathroom. Johnny raises his head and watches his bare ass as he crosses the room and flicks on the bathroom light and, holy shit.
Who keeps condoms under the sink?
Asks Daniel, and for a moment his voice sounds normal again. He closes the bathroom door most of the way instead of coming back out, and Johnny has no clue what is happening.
My nightstand doesn't have a drawer,
he calls, a little defensive. He sits up and pulls his shirt off, drags his shorts down. How does one prepare to fuck a guy in the ass for the first time? Is it different than fucking a girl? He's wondered this a million times, and now he's seriously regretting not following up on the questions. He rubs his hands over the top of his thighs to release some tension. He wonders if he should have drank less or more. He wonders if he should get them both some water or something. He wonders. The bathroom light clicks off and the door opens. And Daniel walks out, gate a little loose, a little wide. Because he flips the condom at Johnny through the air. Think you can figure that out? And then he stands there, pulling idly on himself and watching Johnny expectantly. He is 2 seconds from tapping his foot and checking a non-existent watch. Johnny really thought there'd be more touching at this point. There definitely is with girls. And even when he's done things with guys, they're pretty tactile. But he remembers how Daniel acted at the bar 2 years ago, and figures maybe he's just like this for sex, so he shrugs mentally and tears open the condom packet, rolling it down over his dick. When he looks up again, Daniel has arranged himself across the bed on all fours, head hanging down, ass curving up. The sight makes Johnny lose his thoughts and breath for a second. He stands behind him and palms his ass. And he really likes the shudder that runs through Daniel's body then. This, at least, feels intimate. The way he responds to the smallest touch Johnny gives him. He kind of wants to mold his chest over his back. See how Daniel responds with that much skin contact. But he's also never done this before. And figures the fancy moves can wait until next time. You done admiring the view? Asks Daniel, head turning slightly. Wait much longer, and you're gonna have to fuck me open again on your cock. And it's not that I'm entirely opposed.
Jesus, LaRusso,
says Johnny. And he hurriedly spreads him and works his dick in before Daniel can make him come just from his loud mouth.
You like that?
Asks Johnny.
Yeah, fuck. Fuck, that's it. Make me take that cock. I can do it.
And he sure can. They both sort of pass out afterwards. Johnny wakes up in the middle of the night to take a piss. When he returns to bed, he drags Daniel up to the pillows and pulls the blanket over them both. He's still a little drunk and sinks immediately back into a good dream, arm around Daniel's waist. When Johnny wakes up the next morning, disoriented and a little hungover, Daniel is making breakfast in his kitchen. Johnny stands in the doorway, blinking at him whisking eggs with a fork. Daniel is wearing a pair of his sweatpants and nothing else. The drawstring is pulled tight, the ankles pooling soft over his bare feet. "I used up the rest of your eggs," says Daniel, glancing at him. "Hope you don't mind. Also, you're out of milk. And did you know you have no vegetables in your fridge? Just processed meat and frozen pizzas?" "I don't really like cooking," says Johnny, still a little confused. He wanders in and grabs a sports drink from his fridge. "Don't think you're long for modeling if you keep eating like that, Ace," Daniel says without looking over. And then he's busy making whatever it is he's making and says no more. Johnny slumps down at his kitchen table and drinks slowly, thoughtfully watching Daniel over by the stove. His brain is stretching, getting limber. He is liking whatever this is. Usually when he wakes up hungover, he has to call the whole morning a scratch. Sometimes it's even a relief, because if he's enduring a hangover, he's not trying to think of something to do with the day. But today, he gets to watch Daniel cook in his sweatpants in the bright mid-morning light. 5 minutes later, a plate is dropped in front of him, holding an omelet bleeding cheese. This close, he can smell the weed on him again. LaRusso is a wake-and-bake type of guy, apparently. Who would have guessed? "Where'd you get the cheese? And is this green pepper?" Johnny asks blankly. Daniel takes the other chair at the table, sitting gingerly in a way that makes Johnny's brain go quiet again. He saws at his own omelet with a fork. "Stole the toppings from one of your frozen pizzas. Put them to better use." After breakfast, Daniel looks like he's actually going to wash the dishes, too, in that single-minded way high people get sometimes. And Johnny is unnerved enough to pull him away out of the kitchen and manhandle him down onto the couch in the living room. "Well, I wasn't gonna insist," says Daniel with a slow smirk. And he drags the sweatpants down to take out his dick. Johnny kneels between his legs and bends down. "Finally, something he feels more confident about. He loves feeling the flex of Daniel's abdomen as he rallies to Johnny's mouth, the weight of his hands and his hair. And then Daniel starts talking.
That's nice. That's so nice.
Look at what a pretty cocksucker you turned out to be. Gotta be good at something, I guess.
Your mouth, man. Who knew?
So you like giving and taking, huh? What was it you said? Equal opportunity? What's your gag reflex like? Are you more of a... I bet you are, aren't you? Be a pity to fuck this mouth. And he gently thumbs the corner of Johnny's lips stretched around him. You clearly enjoy taking your time with it. That's all right. That's nice. You go ahead and enjoy that cock like a buffet, man. You earned it. And the weirdest thing is how much Johnny likes it. Afterwards, they stretch out on the sectional and watch TV for a few mindless hours. At some point in the afternoon, Daniel steps out to inspect the balcony and falls asleep in a lounge chair. Johnny works out a little down at the beach, pausing every few minutes to peer up and make sure he's still there. Then he goes back upstairs and takes a shower. He cracks open two beers and wakes Daniel up by handing him one of the cans and bending down to give him another blowjob. It's a good day. A really good day. In the evening, Johnny orders delivery and challenges Daniel to a game of pool. They've had more than a few drinks by then, and everything is smooth and easy. And Johnny doesn't get why every day can't be as good as this one. You just want to see me bend over, says Daniel, but it doesn't stop him from going along with the plan. They get through approximately half a game of 8-ball, Johnny stripes, and he sinks all but the 15, before Daniel apparently loses patience and hops up on the edge of the table, drawing him in and grinding against him. Is this all because you're a sore loser? Asks Johnny, mouthing at his shoulder. Who lost? Says Daniel, sliding a hand into Johnny's waistband, palm hot against his stomach. Game's not over. And he's dated hot chicks who can't play pool before, but they aren't usually so stubbornly egotistical about it. More like, oops, can you show me how again? But Daniel's crap skills and asshole mouth are a dizzying and somehow irresistible combination. Johnny fucks him over the pool table, and if Daniel's hands happen to bump a couple balls and screw the game all to hell, well, wow, what a shocker. Cheating little hot piece of ass. On day two of whatever this is turning into, they start drinking around noon. Johnny goes out briefly while Daniel naps to grab some basic groceries and a bottle of vodka for his prissy tastes. He wonders if Daniel has a preference for Grey Goose or Kettle One and regrets not asking. But if he'd asked, it wouldn't be a surprise, so... So you don't have to, like, go back to your dorm or whatever? Asks Johnny, trading his three out for a queen. He's been wondering about it all day, in a sort of half-worried way. When is he going to have to say goodbye to this strange little episode of life? Daniel looks at him over the top of his hand of cards, eyebrow raised. Johnny, I'm 21. I don't live in a fucking dorm. I don't know how any of that works, he says, shrugging. I live with a friend. He adds after a moment, studying his card, brow now pinched. But I told him I was away with people for spring break. And I'm people? Please, look at the way you live. You're barely a person. And Daniel wins at poker, because it turns out being hot and mean is as good as having a poker face, and he can take a crappy hand all the way. Luckily, Johnny doesn't mind losing the pot. On your knees, ace, says Daniel, slouching in his seat, spreading his legs. He reaches for his glass of vodka and gestures casually at his lap with his free hand, like he's entitled to immediate service from one Johnny Lawrence. And he's right. He is so fucking right. This time, though, Instead of regaling Johnny with an ode to his needy, cock-sucking mouth, Daniel drinks steadily throughout and says, "Did you know you are sucking the cock of UCLA's latest dropout? Yeah, made one whopping semester and a half, failing myself with work study and actual study, and for what? It was all so stupid anyway, all the courses pointless, and here I was supposed to be the first person in my family to go to college." He tips his glass up, and something about his dark tone bothers Johnny, so he takes his mouth away and says, "Aren't you still? I mean, you went. And hey, it's more college than he tried to do, or any Lawrence before him, that he knows of anyway." Daniel sneers, a little bleary around the eyes with it. "Doesn't count if you don't finish. You don't get credit for trying." He pauses, eyes drifting in thought. He gestures with his drink. Literally. And Johnny doesn't really know enough about any of it to say anything to the contrary. So he sets about trying to make him feel better, the only way he knows how. Johnny's days usually slide by easy and frictionless. Sid says he lacks direction, and his mom says he just needs to find something he's interested in, but he hasn't yet, is the thing. Sometimes he looks around at everyone else and wonders how they do it. How do you choose something? Do hobbies and passions just come more easily to other people? Is it supposed to be this hard? The whole job thing feels pretty pointless, like he's pretending to be an adult. A paycheck for the sake of a paycheck and the right to bitch about earning it, like every other person in the world? And he's supposed to get excited to repeat the performance day after day for the rest of his life? What is the point? Daniel is right about one thing. Well, a couple things, but if they're excluding sex, just the one thing. Johnny is barely a person. And he's mostly been okay with that, because what's so great about being a person? Johnny gets to party whenever he wants, and now also apparently gets to have lots of sex with LaRusso. Surely the purpose of life is to have a good time if you can. And Johnny can. So. On day 3 of having LaRusso hang around his apartment in varying stages of nudity, Daniel finally shares some of his weed with Johnny. Johnny's on the couch, perfectly unsuspecting, as he watches a shirtless Daniel inspect his cassette collection and select one to put on the stereo. A minute later, Def Leppard is filling the room, and Daniel is walking over to him, joint and lighter having materialized in his hands. As the guitars kick in on "Pour Some Sugar on Me," Johnny considers the possibility that he is, in fact, lying unconscious in a hospital bed somewhere, traumatizing nurses with his coma dream hard-ons. He doesn't blink or move a muscle as Daniel's knee lands next to his right hip, stops breathing when he swings the other leg up to straddle his lap. They're both already half-hard, but not doing anything about it. Not yet. Daniel places a joint in his mouth and cups his hand around the end. Spark, smolder, suck, and he's tipping his head back, taking it into his lungs. His neck is smooth and long, and Johnny can't look away. If he is traumatizing some nurses somewhere, it's probably worth it. They just have to understand. Daniel reaches a firm hand up to his face, thumb pressing at the corner of his lips, and Johnny opens up automatically. And then Daniel is bending down and blowing a stream of smoke into his mouth. It's the closest they've come yet to actually kissing. Fucking while high takes about 3 times as long, and Johnny doesn't know if that's real time or just how it feels, but either way is good. Daniel rides him slowly. Sometimes it's like he's barely moving at all, like he's lost the plot and content just to sit on his lap with Johnny inside of him, clenching down and inching them both closer to the edge, but not terribly interested in ever reaching it. Eventually, Johnny can't take it anymore, and he pulls him off and gets him good over the back of the couch, and then Daniel's gasping and scrambling for purchase. And it's so good. It's so good. It's so goddamn good. You ever do karate anymore? Asks Johnny later that night, when they're both so, so drunk. They're sprawled on the couch again, Daniel's head in his lap. Yeah, sure, says Daniel, turning his face into his stomach, shutting his eyes. But I don't. I don't fight. Can't. What's karate look like without fighting? Johnny forgets if he asks it aloud. On day 4, Johnny drags Daniel down to the beach out front because it's hot and he wants to go swimming, and more than that, he's a little unimpressed with how much lying around Daniel does when he's not working up a sweat on Johnny's cock. It's not healthy. Dude needs exercise. Bullshit, says Daniel, stubbornly flopping down on the warm sand and refusing to step a foot closer to the water. You just want to fuck me in the tide, but this ain't Greece and you ain't Sandy Olsen. Johnny squints down at him. Don't you mean Danny Zuko? Daniel sparks his joint and then chokes out a laugh. He coughs for a minute straight before gasping red-faced. You think you're Zuko in this hookup? Please. He waves. Go frolic in the waves, Ace. I'll be over here, watching. And yeah, they don't fuck in the ocean because there are loads of people around. But later, Daniel lets Johnny pin him face first against the tiles in the shower. And what does that even mean, he's not Danny Zuko? Olivia Newton-John could never give it to somebody as good as this. Should probably cut back on the drinking and weed, mumbles Daniel later that evening. He is a loose pile of limbs on top of Johnny in the middle of the living room floor, and he keeps rubbing his cheek absently across his chest, like he isn't even aware he's doing it. It's spring break, Johnny points out. Neither of us are students. Oh, right, he thinks about it. But it's Friday night. Daniel hums. Solid point. And I don't have to start looking for a new job until Monday, probably. The idea of Daniel going and getting a job is weird and sounds too much like someone threatening to bring Johnny out of his coma back in the real world. So he slips a hand down his ass and slides a finger into him. And they're off again. On Saturday, Bobby just stands inside his apartment and says, Is that Daniel LaRusso? Because Johnny has forgotten about the party he agreed to host, and there are like a dozen people trickling into his apartment, which probably stinks of vodka and beer, weed, and a lot of sex. So much sex. Sex that is now coming to an end because Johnny agreed to host a stupid party for stupid college students. Can't they go study or something? Oh yeah, says Johnny, a little uneasy and trying to hide it. We've been hanging out a bit. By some miracle, Daniel was dressed when the first group showed up, so there's no scrambling to cover up or look like he'd been doing something other than getting spectacularly fucked by Johnny 20 minutes previous. Except for the marks on his neck, and arms, and the inside of his thighs. Not that anyone can see those. Huh, is all Bobby says, because straight people really don't notice anything if you don't force them to. And then Heather is calling him from the kitchen, and he's walking through the room like he doesn't notice the aforementioned private party smells. For his part, Daniel doesn't seem to mind the new company. He lounges in the kitchen with a glass of vodka and talks college kid shop talk with people passing through. He doesn't send Johnny any private looks or smile at him when he's crossing the kitchen to grab more drinks, or appear to regret the interruption of their sex holiday. And it makes Johnny feel weird. Johnny plays a couple rounds of pool with some guys and drinks some beer. He pretends to give a single flying fuck about the NCAA basketball. He drinks some beer. He thinks about the noise Daniel made that morning when he lifted him against the wall across the room and drilled his ass just right. He sighs and drinks some beer. At some point, he notices Daniel slip out of the kitchen to the hallway, probably going to use the master bedroom's toilet. Johnny looks around to see how absolutely no one is paying any attention, and he follows. Daniel startles as he is leaving the bathroom, hands automatically coming to catch Johnny's bicep. Hey, says Johnny, lounging in the doorway. Sorry about all that. And he jerks his head in the direction of the hallway, the apartment full of people. Daniel looks a little puzzled. Why? It's fine. And as he studies Johnny for a moment, a ghost of a smirk crosses his face. Already feeling that hard up? Why'd you come in here? Hoping for a blowjob to take the edge off or something? No, says Johnny, though if Daniel's offering. I wanted... And then he tries to kiss him. Daniel jerks back, hands coming off his arms to push Johnny gently away. Whoa, how much you had to drink there, Ace? And Daniel sounded pretty condescending every other time he's called him that. But this is the first Johnny has felt like he isn't in on the joke. What? He blinks down at the hands on his chest. A few? I don't know. We've been drinking all week, man. He pats his chest, placating. Right, exactly. And it seems like it's finally catching up to you. Maybe take it easy before you embarrass yourself out there. Johnny is so confused. Confused enough that he doesn't say or do anything to stop Daniel from brushing past him and returning to the party. Strip his dick with paint thinner. What the fuck was that? In the living room, Daniel starts talking to a blonde girl with an amazing rack. No, not talking. He's flirting. Johnny recognizes the pull of his mouth, the way he shapes certain words, and generally acts like he's not a raging asshole for once. Johnny switches to the vodka he bought Daniel. Since when do you go for liquor? Asks Bobby when he catches Johnny pouring another shot into a glass and following it up with a splash of Pepsi. He picks up the handle of Grey Goose and studies the level in the bottle with raised eyebrows. Should I be concerned? Thought I'd try something new, mutters Johnny, slumping over the counter and sipping the disgusting fucking drink. Uh-huh. Everyone's always telling me to pick a direction, make some choices, get my act together. Well, here I go. Bobby checks. The direction you're picking is vodka? Yes, says Johnny into his glass. Got it. And then, because he's a terrible friend, or maybe a great friend who subconsciously understands that the vodka is actually a metaphor, or an analogy, or maybe a stand-in, or something, it's something anyway, for how Johnny feels about Daniel LaRusso, Bobby dumps the rest of it down the sink. He pours him a glass of water and slaps him on the back before leaving the kitchen again. Out in the living room, the sun is setting over the ocean. The room is orange and pink and the music is pounding, and Johnny thinks Daniel should stop flirting with the blonde chick and spar with him. It's a great idea, see, because if they're sparring, they can touch, and no one will know it means anything. And if they're touching, then Daniel will stop being so confusing, because they'll understand each other again. And also, Johnny's got a lot of energy right now and he wants to show off, so... LaRusso, he says, looming up the pair's side. The blonde looks up at him, eyebrows arched a little. She glances over to Daniel like they're communicating secretly, which no. Hey, Johnny, says Daniel blandly. You look like you've been having a good time. Lucky you're already home, huh? Let's spar, he says, winningly. I don't think that's a good idea. You guys spar? Asks the blonde. Karate, explains Daniel. Johnny taps him, and he bats his arm down. His face flashes some kind of warning, but Johnny's no quitter. Come on, wanna fight? Show me your moves, man, he says. What, college boy can't fight anymore? Oh, do you go to school around here? You didn't say, she says, tone oddly bright, like she can change the direction of this conversation. What a moron. Does Daniel only go for morons? I don't anymore, he says to her. His jaw is tight. Bobby arrives then, expression neutral. He puts a hand on Johnny's arm and says, Don't think now's the best time for karate, Johnny. Maybe later. How about you come play some beer pong with us? Oh, sure. That's exactly what he needs. More to drink, mutters Daniel. You get I'm trying to fix this, right? Bobby asks him, going flinty-eyed and stiff with dislike as he looks at him.
There's nothing to fix,
says Johnny, shrugging his hand off. He looks at Daniel.
Look, me, you, on the beach. Let's do this.
Daniel narrows his eyes.
I don't want to fight you, you drunk idiot, he says flatly. Try to make me. I'll just leave.
Leave? He scoffs.
Right.
As if Daniel could walk away from this, what this has been. How delusional can a guy get? Just the idea makes Johnny's thoughts turn ugly and sullen. He leans forward and gets a hand around Daniel's left wrist, and he only means to. He doesn't know what he means. Only knows that if he can just touch him, maybe they'd understand each other a little better. But maybe he pulls him a little too, like a fucking kid trying to get someone's attention. Taking no heed of the darkening expression on his face, Johnny keeps talking. He says,
oh, and I suppose that's what this whole week's been, right? It's just me making you do things you don't want to do.
Daniel punches him. And there are some gasps or something. Johnny blinks down at the floor and turns his head to look at him, hand coming up automatically to cup his cheek. Daniel is pale and staring at him, eyes filling with horror and anger. He glances down at his throwing arm, hand still balled into a fist, and he starts to look sick.
Whoa, says the blonde chick, shrinking back a little.
LaRusso, he says, but Daniel's not paying any attention. He's wide-eyed and breathing weird, and he steps back and back, and then he's at the door, and he's grabbing his keys and wallet, and then he's gone. He's gone.
If you remember this tomorrow, says Bobby, staring Johnny over to sit on the couch, I'll be real interested in knowing what the hell that was all about.
He's gone.
The end of part 2.